the value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. On today's show, as Joe Biden becomes the 46th president of the United States, we look at how sustainable his climate and social policies are, how they differ from Donald Trump's.
So Trump really did dismantle a lot of the existing policy architecture around climate that had been put in place by his predecessors. And then Biden, on the other hand, put forward a comprehensive climate plan that aims to decarbonize the US economy by 2050.
How quickly he'll want to act.
This was a central part of Biden's campaign, and he's won a legislative majority, so it's proven to be a vote winner. And he'll be eager to capitalize on that majority, you know, however slim it might be, and deliver some meaningful progress ahead of the midterms in 2022.
And what it will mean for investors.
And now that you've had this giant shift change in terms of what we'll see coming out of the U.S. in terms of policy around it, it could really be that third leg of the stool and continue to propel this story going forward.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Just when we thought things couldn't get much more dramatic than 2020, along came 2021.
We are gathered at a time when democracy is in crisis. Recent polling shows that 39% of Americans believe the election that just occurred, quote, was rigged.
I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard.
But eventually, democracy prevailed.
The report we make is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will be the president and the vice president according to the ballots that have been given to us.
By the time you listen to this, Joe Biden will have been sworn in as the new president of the United States of America. And he's got a big job on his hands. And it's not just about uniting a divided nation. He's also trying to bring about a huge step change in US climate policy and investment. Changes which could have far-reaching implications for investment across sectors including power, transport, real estate and agriculture, to name just a few. So, in this show, we're going to discuss what Biden's policies are, if he'll be able to pass them into law, and what it means for future investment. With me today to discuss these issues are two experts.
I'm Catherine McCauley, and I'm a sustainable investment analyst at Schroders.
I'm Sarah Brighton-Hughes, head of sustainability North America at Schroders.
So in the first part of the show, we're going to take a look at the main policies Biden's trying to enact and how they differ from the Trump administration.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So we've had 4 years of Trump. We know he's a climate skeptic at the best. Catherine, can you give us a flavour of some of the policies Trump's enacted in his 4 years and how they differ from Biden?
The differences are pretty stark. I mean, Biden and Trump ran on very different platforms in general, but I'd say they don't get much further apart than on climate. So Biden put climate at the core of his agenda, whereas it didn't really even factor into Trump's platform other than to highlight the actions that he's taken to dismantle existing environmental regulation. So without going into too much detail, we saw a relaxation on offshore drilling regulation.
Today is a day that we come to recognize the latest and next step in making the course correction that this nation had took a curve and a detour in trying to shut down offshore exploration and offshore production.
We saw fuel economy standards in the autos industry delayed.
Today's proposal would undercut Obama administration fuel efficiency standards intended to combat climate change. It would require...
And perhaps most famously, he pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord
So Trump really did dismantle a lot of the existing policy architecture around climate that had been put in place by his predecessors. And then Biden, on the other hand, put forward a comprehensive climate plan that aims to decarbonize the US economy by 2050.
I'm announcing my plan for a clean energy revolution. It outlines what we have to do to meet this challenge head on and how we're going to get there. We're going to invest $1.7 trillion in securing our future so that by 2050, the United States will be 100% clean energy economy with net zero emissions.
And this is covering everything from power to transport, agriculture, and real estate. So it really is an economy-wide transformation plan. And he's also about to rejoin the Paris Agreement on his first day back in office. So they really are pretty diametrically opposed on climate. And then I suppose on the social side, Biden put forward a much more ambitious social agenda, particularly on labor and healthcare. And another good example of difference will be on tax. So we saw tax cuts under Trump at the end of 2017, and we might see these tax rates rise again under Biden. So they are a little bit like chalk and cheese in most policy areas, though one area of similarity that it's possibly worth highlighting is on onshoring. So both candidates put forward a big focus on American jobs and production throughout their campaign. And we'd expect this to be a key theme for Biden under his new administration.
Yeah, there's clearly lots of policies, lots of proposals, and there's been a flurry put forward by the House Democrats, the Biden campaign, as you've spoken about, and the Senate. What are the main proposals, and are they all singing from the same hymn sheet?
Broadly speaking, I think we can say yes. So the proposals are by no means identical, but in terms of the level of ambition on climate, they are pretty similar. So all three have an overarching 2050 net zero ambition at their core, and all three envisage significant levels of government spending to get there. So they differ on exact amounts. So the Senate proposed $1 trillion on infrastructure. Biden put forward a $2 trillion plan, and the House Democrats came in at the middle at $1.5 trillion. So they're a bit different there, but they do all envisage significant spending to really propel the US to become a leader in clean industries and clean technologies. And I think what's interesting is that all three proposals placed a much greater emphasis on federal investment as a key driver here compared to market-based mechanisms such as a carbon price. That being said, I wouldn't necessarily rule out the possibility for carbon pricing, particularly with Janet Yellen at the Treasury and increasing calls from the private sector to introduce a carbon price. And I know Biden's own campaign spoke of a potential enforcement mechanism from 2025 based on a polluter pays principle, so very much hinting at the carbon price there, and we might see that date brought forward if they can find consensus here. So I'd say all in all, we saw a very united front from the Democrats on climate last year.
And just to add on to Catherine's prediction of a carbon price, I also think it's notable that the Commodities Futures and Trading Commission, the USCFTC, came out actually against the Trump administration and has recommended that the United States should establish a price on carbon, a fair, economy-wide, and effective price that will reduce emissions consistent with the Paris Agreement. And they came out with this in September. So I do think there is a lot of momentum for a potential carbon pricing scheme here in the US down the road.
Okay, Catherine, you've created a big document for us, which goes into depth into each policy and the possible impacts, which we'll put into a link into the show notes. The policies, as you've already mentioned, covered plenty of sectors, including power, transport and tech, among many others. Can you just give us a flavour of the most important ones, their key proposals and their implications?
But I think it's worth highlighting a few of these. So I'd say first on power, Biden's put forward an ambitious target to decarbonize the power sector by 2035. So this will be done through a combination of tax incentives and possibly establishing a nationwide clean energy standard. So we should expect to see an accelerated shift towards clean energy alternatives with benefits across the entire value chain from, you know, utilities with renewables exposure to transmission and distribution companies. The second aspect that's worth highlighting is in the transport industry. So there's a big push to accelerate the shift towards zero emissions vehicles through tougher emission standards and public investments into things like EV charging infrastructure and also updating the rail network. So we should expect to see a much more supportive environment for electrification and other types of low emission vehicles with associated headwinds for traditional combustion engine cars as regulation tightens. And again, these benefits would be for the entire value chain. And finally, I think we should expect a push on clean technology with accelerated R&D investments into energy storage, carbon capture, hydrogen, and possibly nuclear. So there may be some interesting opportunities for companies with exposure to these industries as well. And then on the social side, Biden's put forward a number of labor proposals, including increasing the minimum wage, enhancing protections for gig economy workers, and he's also targeting healthcare, including proposals to expand access and improve affordability. So we might see some headwinds here for consumer retail companies in terms of rising labor costs and for healthcare companies in terms of pricing regulation. I think the question now will be around what Biden's actually able to get through Congress.
They are the highlights, but there's plenty more policies, and you can find them out at schroders.com/insights. But having policies and being able to enact them are two very different things. So, in part two, we'll look at how likely it is that Biden will be able to pass those policies into law, and if he can't, which ones he might have to tone down.
Get in touch with us by email at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com or visit our website, schroders.com/investor download.
Lost in the chaos yesterday was the fact that Democrats are now set to take control of the U.S. Senate after winning both Senate runoff elections in Georgia.
The Democrats unexpectedly won two more seats in the Senate in January as a result of the runoffs in Georgia. It gives the party the narrowest possible majority in the Senate and means Democrats have control of both houses of Congress and the White House for the first time in 10 years. That should make it easier for Joe Biden to begin implementing his agenda upon entering the office. But Catherine, first of all, what does control of Congress mean for Biden's policies?
The Georgia result is definitely good news for Biden's climate agenda, and as a lot of what he's trying to do, particularly on the infrastructure side, will require congressional approval. That said, I do think the discussion can often miss the challenges that the very slim majority that you highlighted will pose for Biden. So it's not quite as black and white as lots of the headlines would have you believe. I think firstly, you know, Democrats are aligned in their support for climate agenda, but I would say to varying degrees. So we saw that the proposals from the Senate and the House Democrats differed to Biden's own platform by up to $1 trillion. And secondly, quite a few Democratic representatives will be from conservative-leaning districts. So they'll likely be cautious in terms of fiscal spending on climate. And this will probably be a constraint on the amount of spending that Biden's able to pursue. So he may not quite hit that $2 trillion figure, but we would expect the focus to remain on decarbonization and clean tech.
And just to add to those points that you've stated, and I completely agree with, given the slim majority we have here, we've also had a incredible disruption and a divisive country here. And Biden is a career politician. And I think he would want his legacy to be as much about bringing unity to this country as he will about being a warrior for climate. So I think there's going to be a balancing act. And he's a career politician. So there's no doubt in my mind that he will be reaching across the aisle and trying to come up with a bipartisan package around climate.
And I think it's also worth mentioning that there are a few avenues outside of the legislative arena that Biden can pursue. So firstly, as president, there are a reasonable amount of actions he can take through executive authority. These include, I suppose, most famously rejoining the Paris Agreement, possibly tightening regulation in the oil and gas and power sectors, establishing more aggressive fuel economy standards in the auto sector, and he'll also have some discretion to direct federal procurement towards clean ends. The second element is his ability to set climate very high on the agenda at federal agencies. So his appointments so far indicate a very strong response across the entire government, with candidates that have significant climate expertise and ambition set to enter quite a few federal agencies. And finally, I do think it's important to remember that state-level policies have been a key driver of US climate action in recent years. And we would expect this local leadership to continue and really to strengthen under Biden.
I definitely agree with that state level policy. And I think an interesting factoid that most people aren't aware of is that actually 1/3 of Americans already live in a community that has committed to net zero targets. So there is this aspect of what's going to occur overarching at the federal level, and then the buy-in from the states and the local policies that we are going to have here.
In terms of climate change, what are the main actions Biden will take when he comes into power?
So in a normal election cycle, we'd usually expect to have started to hear, you know, a bit of a rough policy outline by now, or at least some hints or leaks in terms of the new president's plan for their first year in office. This election has been quite distinct because of the Georgia Senate runoff race. So we haven't had perhaps the same level of detail on the near-term policy agenda than we might have otherwise had. That said, we do know that Biden's planning to rejoin the Paris Agreement on his first day back in office, so that should probably be the first thing to look for. And then discussion will then turn to, you know, what form these policies might take and when they'll come through. So quite a few analysts are expecting two big economic bills next year. I guess first up would be an infrastructure bill, possibly including additional economic stimulus. And there would likely be a strong green component to that spending. And then later on in the year, we might start to see a second bill targeting some of the longer term agenda items, such as tax, drug pricing, and possibly some further subsidies and incentives for decarbonization. Now, that's just one possible policy path. And a lot of this will depend on, you know, whether Biden pursues a bipartisan approach, as Sarah mentioned earlier, or tries to get this done via budget reconciliation, which is basically a way of fast-tracking certain types of legislation through the Senate. And that's something that we'll be watching closely.
I think the quickest thing is going to happen past the rejoining the Paris Accord is we'll see a stream of non-enforcement orders on some of the policies that the Trump administration has put into place with very short public comment periods over the past few months. So I think first we'll see a string of non-enforcement orders, and some of the larger packages that Catherine spoke about are probably going to come in the second half of the year. From, you know, the U.S. has to get the coronavirus under control. We have to roll out our vaccines here. So there's a lot of different initiatives that are going to be on Biden's first 100-day plan that may take initial priority as we continue to work through from a bipartisan perspective some of these larger bills.
We've also seen the power or lack thereof of strong and consistent messages from the top, which has been evident throughout the pandemic in many countries. I mean, how significant do you think Biden's policies will be in terms of messaging and that step change for the US?
I think we should expect very strong messaging on climate. You know, this was a central part of Biden's campaign, and he's won a legislative majority, so it's proven to be a vote winner. And he'll be eager to capitalize on that majority, you know, however slim it might be, and deliver some meaningful progress ahead of the midterms in 2022.
His actions with his appointments have already spoken as loud as his words are, with John Kerry being named the climate czar.
I will do all in my power to live up to your expectations.
And a new position on our National Security Council, Gina McCarthy.
To lead the newly formed White House Office of Domestic Policy, I'm appointing Gina McCarthy.
Gina, who was formerly at the Natural Resources Defense Council, leading on the EPA, and Brian Deese, the former head of sustainable investing at BlackRock, being on his National Economic Council.
Okay, just one final question in this part. There's been speculation, nothing concrete yet, that Biden will just do one term as president. What concerns do you have if Biden's presidency lasts just the 4 years?
I suppose the past 4 years are a testament to the impact that a climate skeptic president can have on the regulatory infrastructure in the US. But evidence also suggests that public opinion is shifting across both parties in favor of greater climate actions. So there was a survey from the Pew Research Center in June last year in which 65% of respondents across all political walks of life answered that they believe that the federal government is doing too little to reduce the effects of climate change. So this could really become a topic that starts to, you know, bridge the political divide. And I'd also say, you know, let's not forget that we do have midterms coming up in November 2022. And historically, midterms tend to be bad for the incumbent party. So Biden will be keen to make as much progress as possible to try to maintain or even strengthen his majority at the midterms. And if he loses that congressional majority, he could face a much tougher second half of his term in terms of being able to pass legislation, notwithstanding scope for some bipartisan progress.
so we know the policies and how control of Congress will affect what Biden can and can't do. But how will they impact investors and stakeholders? That's what we'll discuss in the final part of the show. So there's trillions of dollars of investment at stake. With each policy will, of course, have a significant impact for investors and stakeholders. We also know that sustainability and climate change is high up on investors' agenda. Data from Morningstar late last year showed global assets in sustainable funds hit £930 billion in the third quarter of 2020, a record high. And we know from the recent Schroders Global Investor Study that 77% of people want to invest in funds that don't compromise their beliefs. So, Sarah, first of all, to you, are we likely to see this sustainability trend to continue, and especially once Biden's in power?
I think not only are we going to see this trend continue, we are likely to see it continue to accelerate as well. So I think of it much as a three-legged stool. You have demand, economics, and policy. And we have firmly two and a half legs of those stool right now. So you continue to have consumer demand. You just highlighted some of the results from our global investor survey. Many people think that Americans, or there's a myth that Americans all are behind on the sustainable investing journey, or they don't want to take part in it. Actually, if you dig into those numbers and you peel back the onion, more Americans feel like they will lose out on returns if they don't invest sustainably than if they do. So you're continuing to see this pent-up end client demand that has only been increasingly rising and surging over the last 5 years. And, you know, demand and policy can only go so far. The economics of it need to work. And now we are in an environment where you have green power and clean power being much more economical in many cases than the dirty legacy industries of the past. And I think it was really eye-opening for a lot of people here when you saw in October, when you saw NextEra in terms of market cap accelerate over ExxonMobil.
The NextEra belongs to those who discover again what it means to be an American. Those who have the resourcefulness, the ingenuity, and the grit to ensure the next energy to power our dreams will be American energy. This is our era. This is America's energy era.
NextEra is our largest here in the U.S., our largest producer of renewable power, and they overtook ExxonMobil in terms of market cap. I don't think that 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago, or maybe even 3 years ago, people would have anticipated that bit happening. And it's not just here, and it's globally. And then the third leg of the stool is the policy. So EU has come out with their comprehensive, progressive, robust, sustainable finance plan, really putting their flag in the ground that they want to be a leader in the space. And not only as part of that plan will there be additional fund disclosures, but they're actively looking to move capital away from legacy dirty or brown industries into green industries. So you have that policy occurring. You've had a policy explosion globally here. So in 2017, there were about 100 policies around sustainable investing. That accelerated to over 218 at the end of 2019. So you've seen this robust policy growth. You've seen them almost double, majority of them favorable towards promotion of sustainable investing, except everywhere here in the US. And now that you've had this giant shift change in terms of what we'll see coming out of the US in terms of policy around it, it could really be that third leg of the stool and continue to propel this story going forward.
So does that mean we're going to see a mad dash for companies that are seen to be meeting these climate goals rather than the ones that are choosing to possibly not necessarily ignore it, but certainly put it to one side?
I'm not sure if mad dash is the right word, because I think what I had long argued, regardless of who won the election, is that the sustainable bus or the train had already left the station. You are already seeing a number of corporations, big multinational corporations, assessing their climate risk. They had large institutional investors and stakeholders demanding that they lay out plans and tell us how they were preparing for the transition to a cleaner environment. So you've seen this was already occurring. And what I think you have seen is this expansion of that from both a geographic perspective as well as a market cap perspective. And our sustainable investor team here at Schroders, we do a lot to help facilitate that with the companies that we're investing in as well. So it's not just challenging them on what are their plans, it's holding workshops for non-executive directors and educating them on the issues that they should be thinking about as the companies are coming up with all of their climate change readiness plans. And we had seen that happening. We had seen that happen over here in the US. We've seen that happen in other parts of the world outside of Europe. It's not just a European thing anymore. And I think for us as a team, it's to really go in there and say, okay, this company actually has a policy, but policies are one thing, action is another. So it's to look and see what companies we own are really taking this serious versus those that are greenwashing, and engaging with our companies over time to really understand their readiness for this transition.
Okay, so it's interesting you talk about the stakeholders there, because Schroders chief exec Peter Harrison has just written about why climate change might be creating a 1929 moment. And what he means by that is a complete overhaul of company transparency. He's even written to lots of the major companies in the UK about this. So, Sarah, is this a 1929 moment for companies?
I think it very well could be. You know, we have often argued that when this transition comes, it will come at a hockey stick type moment. This transition that we're going to have that is going to be or has the potential to be quite violent. And as we're managing people's money and people's money as part of the long term, it is inherent in our fiduciary duty to be asking them these questions on how they're potentially navigating this future risk to ensure that we are investing money in companies that are not only going to survive this transition, but actually thrive over the long term.
And again, I suppose it helps that now the President of the United States actually believes in climate change. That's an easier message to enforce from investors to companies.
It's a little bit of an easier narrative. And interestingly here, I have often been a proponent of using the term sustainability rather than ESG investing, because I think from a U.S. perspective, ESG investing can sometimes elicit an emotive reaction, and that's not what we're doing here. We're looking for the most sustainable investments over the long term, and when you rephrase it about the long-term sustainability of a company's business model or the durability of cash, long-term cash flows for this investment, it's translating it into a language that the everyday person can understand. And I think that is what is at the heart of what we're trying to do as investors here. So yes, is the conversation a little bit easier? Are there, now that we have Biden in office? I think it will be, because I think you're going to see some of these policies come in place. And particularly if we do get that carbon pricing scheme here, it's going to have a real ramification on companies' profitability. So I think that conversation is a lot easier to have here. And I would also be remiss if I didn't add in, and Catherine had touched on this a little bit, on the social side of it as well. And Biden's agenda not just being all about the climate. There's also a lot on the social side. And from that perspective, from an American view, social issues are just as high up on the agenda as climate issues. So it'll be interesting how he threads the needle on some of these minimum wage recommendations he wants to make, particularly as you see retail and restaurants being the worst hit industries in terms of needing to increase wages, but also in terms of the coronavirus. So we have a lot of tricky needles to thread here in quite a divisive country.
Yeah, you can't help to think that the fallout of the pandemic will magnify all these issues, but that's to come. So just finally, markets have risen sharply already, and you've also said that it's not about a mad dash for companies to be seen to be meeting those climate goals, but have investors already missed out on the sustainability trade?
No, because I don't think of sustainability as a trade. Now, there are thematic industries, yes, you can invest in to take part of the trade. And I don't even think that we've missed out on those industries yet either. I mean, we could have decarbonization be the mega trend of the next decade. It is really realistic that could happen. But I think you are going to continue to see assets flow into those managers that are committed to sustainability. And I think it's just as much policy related. Again, we talked about performance. You saw the most sustainable strategies outperform in the depths of the markets in 2020. And it was really that litmus test that proved that sustainability was no longer a bull market luxury. So I think you're going to continue to see that, along with the consumer demand, you're going to continue to see this trend just accelerate. So I would say that we're still in the early innings of adoption of sustainability, particularly globally. I don't want to speak for the European market, who tends to be ahead of the rest of us. But if I think about trends we're seeing coming out of America, trends we're seeing come out of South America, trends we're seeing come out of Asia and Australia, I think you'll continue to see that pick up in demand.
I definitely agree there. I mean, we saw China, Japan, South Korea all come out with net zero targets, and now the US is set to join. So I think we can expect particularly strong growth in ESG flows in Asia and North America, as Sarah highlights. And these geographies could actually capture market share from Europe, which has dominated the sustainable investing market to date. In terms of your initial question, David, I do still think there are ways to play the theme selectively, and that might be through looking across the full entire global value chain for the industries that stand to benefit, or perhaps looking at companies that are leading in the less obviously green industries. And of course, there will be opportunities that emerge as the regulatory picture becomes clearer. And at the global level, you know, well over half the world's GDP is set to be generated in countries that have made these net zero emission targets. And we're seeing these commitments really translate into meaningful policy action as we speak. So we really do believe that we're now beyond the tipping point on this, and we would expect momentum on decarbonisation to strengthen from here on out.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, go to schroders.com/insights, where you can find out the latest research from Catherine and articles from around Schroders. If you want to get in touch with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows, email us at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com. Remember to rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every other Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.